Good afternoon, everybody. How's everyone doing?
Good.
Yeah, good.
Are you wearing a mic?
It's got a bad cable, so I'll shout. Raise your hand in the back if you can't hear me or something, and Roy will say the same thing back there. His hearing's really good.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to show you a case study called, well, I call it the AirLog email messaging system. But my main excuse is I want to show you a feature. I'm going to emphasize a feature called the Log Manager in Progress. Let me ask you some questions. How many people here have a legacy Progress application that they want to upgrade? Good. Okay, that's good. How many people here have used Publish Subscribe? All right, so a couple of you. How many people here have used the Log Manager? Okay, just a couple. Okay, so maybe I can show you a few new tricks. We'll see what happens. All right, so my name's Paul Guggenheim, Paul Guggenheim & Associates. I don't really do much on LinkedIn, but all of a sudden this year I got all these things saying, hey, congratulations, it's your 30th year. So I somehow must have put that I started in 84, so now LinkedIn has got all my things. So all these people that I haven't heard of, hey, yeah, congratulations. So I feel old, but not really old, because not until my son passed the bar and became a lawyer, and now I feel old. So now I have a son that's a lawyer. But anyway, I've been doing Progress training for a long time. I have a sharp menu system that I've designed, which is a database-driven pull-down system. I work with White Star as a strategic partner, ProStar, and Appro. Appro has a web speed app called, or App Technologies has a web speed app called Appro. And I have many consulting clients. So mostly right now I do a lot of consulting in the Progress world. Head of the Chicago Area User Group, and also on the executive committee for the PUG Challenge. So that's a little bit about myself. In this presentation, I want to talk about some of the objectives that my client wanted for this system. They wanted to create a messaging alert system, and which meant they wanted to record messages in a log file. They also wanted to optionally email messages to members of an email group. So depending on the message, they might set a flag, and that particular message might send a message out to somebody. They also wanted to add it to existing programs without significant modification. So hence, that's why I asked you all about a legacy application. So that's one of the things I want to show you, you know, briefly. And then I want to also show you to set up database rules that determine when messages are sent. Okay, so that last bullet continues on this slide. And what we're going to do is we're going to set up database rules. And they're going to be based on three things that are fairly simple: part availability, customer orders, and transaction errors. Okay, sound good so far? There's also going to be three database views. And that's why I got messed up a little bit. The message, customer, part transaction type, email group and user, and email history. So I'm going to show you those. Courtesy, oh no. What happened to my views? Oh, there it is. Okay, there we go. Okay. Here are the three database views. There's me, the mad scientist. There, okay. That didn't show up the first time. Now we got it back. All right. So this is courtesy of PCase. Anyone use the PCase tool? Okay. Tools for Progress? No, it's a nice tool that allows you to do some modeling of the database. You know, does your parent-child relationships. And so I knew we needed a message master for this client so that they could put out some various messages. I knew that there were certain transaction types that we had to deal with. For instance, an example of a transaction type might be an inventory adjustment. So this is a manufacturer. Could be an order confirmation, a PO receipt, or something called a container close. Okay, and then there also, here's a part master and a customer master. You might recognize those tables. Anyone recognize those tables? Yeah, few. Yeah, they're QAD, but don't tell anybody. Okay. I don't want to get in trouble here, but for a particular part or a particular customer, for a specific transaction type, if that combination is reached, we may want to issue a particular message. So hence, we have a couple of cross-reference tables that are the intersection of those tables. Okay? So specifically, which parts for specific transaction types should create a particular message? And that would be my message transaction type part table. Or which customers for specific transaction types should create a particular message? So that's the message one. And here are just some simple examples. For instance, if an inventory adjustment transaction occurs and drops the on-hand quantity below 50% for a certain part, maybe a critical part, X100 perhaps, we'll issue a warning message that part is below the safety stock level. Okay. Or we may want to, for a particular customer, issue a notification message when an order acknowledgement occurs for customer ABC, because ABC is a very important customer, and not only is it important on for a sales order, but maybe on the factory floor, we may want to monitor, you know, the progress in the manufacturing process for that. And going back here, I'm going to go back to the message master a second. I don't know if you can see that way in the back, but there's a field called message text. And message text is going to have some keywords or codes that I'm going to put into the text. So at runtime, when we're going to issue a message, we can do some text substitution. So things like the message number might be useful, the domain, the site, the group. All these things might be meaningful to appear in a message that may go out. User ID, of course, what the calling program was. Also, &1 to &9, those are user defined. Anyone here use the substitute function? Okay, yeah, it's really useful. That's something that I did to help perform the substitution inside of the messaging alert system. Okay, so another simple example, invalid part number &6 and site for transaction type &3. So for this particular message, which is a part message, &6 means part number. But if we were doing something for the customer, then, you know, 6 might be the customer number as an example, something like that. So this is just showing you use the substitution method or function. All right, so that was the first set of diagrams. This is another one that's very simple. Email group and users, okay? An email group can consist of many users. A user could belong to many groups. So what does that tell you in database design lingo? You need a cross-reference table. So this is our many-to-many, and this is two one-to-many relationships. So this eGroup user X table shows which users get an email depending on which email group is assigned to a message. So up here, you see the email group name. Well, you guys in the back probably can't see that, but that says email group name back there. So that tells you that particular message will get that email. Okay? All right, so as I mentioned, email group, many users, user may belong to one email group, and so on. So this is what I just said. Okay? So far, so good. Didn't lose anyone so far. Didn't keep everyone awake so far, but okay. All right. Email history, this one is probably the busiest of the database design screens, but think of email hist. Typically when you're designing a history table, you want to put the kitchen sink in there because that's your reporting. You want to say, okay, we've emailed what can we, you know, derive from all the emails and all the messages that we've received. So this is on the database side, separate from the log manager stuff that I'm about to show you. But as you can see here, you have all these things feeding into it. So you have the parts, you have the customers, the transactions, and this can all be done in a reporting case. You have the email group here, along with the messages. Okay. You also need the email HIST list as a child below that, because Peggy might be belong to this one email group back in May, but now that it's June, she was switched to another one. So this records who on that list got an email at that point in time. So you can also track things like that. Okay. So that's where the email history came in. Okay. Okay, so the history records now can be tracked by email group and user, transaction type, customer and part number, and so on like that. Also, this was on a Unix system, so emails were generated using the EmailX program called from the ABL. So I just did a call out and parse something using OS command. Anyone use MailX to do email? Okay. Yeah. I've also on Windows systems where they didn't want on the Windows Server Outlook, they wanted to just use a base system where we had to use sockets. So it was. I've also used things like that, sockets on the email side. But that's really not the main part of this talk. Okay, but I thought I'd throw that out there for you. All right, so tools of the trade. We got the business rule engine, the subscribe, publish, and the log manager system handle. Okay, so business rule event engine, when an event occurs, we'll use the information from the message customer part, transaction type, database design to determine if a message should be generated. And we'll use one of those cross-reference tables to see if that part is one of the ones that should be used for that given transaction type. So really, a business rule engine is just going in there and checking to see if that one satisfies those conditions. And it's all database-driven. So that's why we did that design before in the cross-reference table to find out what's going on and whether it should be generating a message. Okay? And then that's the screwdriver, okay, like how my tech stuff. Okay. All right, so now we go to the hammer, okay, which is the subscribe publish named events. Okay, so here this is probably a review for most of you, the subscribe publish. How many people have programmed in OO? A few people? Okay. Subscribe publish is also something that you can do in the object-oriented side as well. Again, this is more low tech, so this is going to use the subscribe statement and the publish statement. But really, it's the same principle. So a named event is an internal procedure, and the subscribe statement enlists procedures to access those named events through the publish statement. So the publish statement runs the internal procedure for a subscriber, but doesn't raise an error if the internal procedure is not subscribed or does not exist. Okay, so the publish is really your friend. It's much better to use than just a run statement, because a run statement, if you do a run and you don't have the program there or it's not doesn't exist, you're going to get an error. In fact, you'll get a stop error. Okay, so you come to my finally we can catch errors thrown to us. That's tomorrow. We'll learn more about errors. Okay. So this concept is really called loose coupling, where you have one procedure or one object, it could be an object and another object, and they can talk to each other through this thing called publish-subscribe or subscribe-publish. And so publish gives you an advantage because you can publish something without having it being subscribed to and you don't get an error and it can be done at runtime. So let me show you a real simple example of that. And this is going to show you, allows the user to choose whether logging should be enabled for a particular update that they may use. So I have a little toggle box here called Enable Logging when they pull up that example. Okay, so let me run this first and show you what it looks like. And here's where it is. And let's say to start, I'll update Laura Dunn. Okay, so I'll make her birthday 1989. Now, is the enable logging checked? No. Okay. But now I'm going to do, which order? Yeah, now I'm going to do Emily Levy, but I'm going to check enable logging. Do that. So I go up here and change her phone number to 85, like that. And then I'm going to go down to Dorothy Davidson, change that to 87, like that. Press go and exit. Okay. And if we go out here and we go to studlog.txt, there we are. Can you see that? Oh, let's put that off the page there. Let me move that over. How's that? Okay. Is that fine? You can see that way in the back? Okay. Cover your one eye and read across. Now cover your other eye. Okay, got that. All right, so student two, student four, and so that's how it works. All right, so how did we make that work? Let me just show you. It's fairly simple. In this program, we actually call another program called studlog.p persistently. And this is a really simple program. All it contains is one thing, which is an internal procedure called student change. I probably should have bolded that. Which receives the student record buffer as a parameter and records output to the student log.txt file. Okay. And the other thing is the enable logging toggle box, whenever you do that, does the subscribe or the unsubscribe of the student change event in the studlog.p to the current procedure. So I'll show you that in the next slide or two. So this is studlog.p. Can fit on one slide. Okay. I like showing code. That's why people come to my talks, because they actually see stuff they can feel and touch and try. But this is it. Define parameter buffer student for student, output this file, append, put unformatted this stuff, put a timestamp, put today, date and timestamp, and output close, and you're done. Okay? Also on value changed of logging. Okay, so when we flick the toggle box, here's what happens. If it's yes, we say subscribe. If it's no, we do unsubscribe, but it's the same syntax. Subscribe procedure log handle. Log handle is the studlog.p program. And that's the subscriber, and that has the student changed in it. And it's going to get executed whenever this procedure does a publish. So whenever the main program says publish student changed and passes a student, that's going to run. And that's how it works. And unsubscribe just simply does the opposite and turns that off. So here's our trigger on default action. So whenever we, on the browse, do a... do an enter right there, that's what comes up. Or if we do a mouse double click, that's a default action. Okay, and we find the current student exclusive lock, display it, update it, refresh the browse, and then we do a publish student change buffer student. So that's the thing that actually gets executed, which calls that program and generates the entry in the log file. Okay. Any questions on that? Okay. All right. So that's really the subscribe publish. So we're using that same principle when we're doing this. Okay. So everything is fine. Everybody's happy. Ignorance is bliss. Okay. However, what happens when more than one user tries to write to the same file at the same time? As I tested, and I was surprised to find out, it doesn't matter if the program uses output to studlock.txt or output to studlock.txt append. Okay? Peggy's making a face. She's thinking of all the code that she's written with output too. I've written a lot of code with that too. But you've come to the right place, because I'm going to show you how we can fix that. But it turns out that only one user's write command is written to the output file at one time. Now, depending on how you do it, a lot of times you don't have this problem, because as soon as you write it, you then close the output right away. So maybe the chances that they do it from another procedure is not going to happen. But this could be a problem.
Houston, we have a problem.
I don't know if you can hear that.
Houston, we have a problem.
Right. No sound. That's Houston, we have a problem. But anyway. All right, so I'm going to run a couple programs and show you this in action. All right. So I have two environments. I have a GUI environment and a character environment. And this one is going to run create message1.p, and it's going to say output stream log to log1.txt append.
It's also out of the
Oh shoot, yeah, I better run that over there. No, thank you. And this one is sort of off too. There we go. Okay. And then this one is going to run create message2. This text is probably hard to see in the back. It's identical to this one, except we have descending. We're going to run it in descending order. So there's 3,000 students. That's going to run starting at student 3,000 and going backwards by student ID. And we're just going to do five of them. And notice we start the output streams outside of the for each. So we're not just closing it immediately. We're doing a little loop. Okay. And to make matters worse, I'm doing some processing, which I'm illustrating with a pause in each one of those. Okay? So, let's run this one first, and then this one second. Okay? So now I'll give you some eye candy, you know, in the afternoon. Place your bets which one is going to finish first. Okay. So this one is going to finish first. Okay, and this one here. Okay, so it turns out, let's take a look what we have here. So in this case, the log1.txt is the descending one. Was that the one we ran first or second?
Second.
Okay, so it turns out, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to remove that. Okay. It turns out the second or the last program started takes precedence at writing to the output file, log1.txt. So let's see if that's true. So if I were to run this one first, and then this one second, hopefully this will work. And you see now it's the one that's in ascending order, which was the last one. Okay.
Now, Paul, what if you use the buffer?
Somebody suggested that. You know, I haven't tried it yet. So that is something you can try. I don't know if it would work.
It probably would, although you would still get collisions. You might have two lines written on the same line.
Oh, okay.
Not executed, but it would solve the problem.
Okay. Yeah, you could use unbuffered then if you think that'll work. But you know, it's to me, it's there's
something screwy around here.
Okay, there's Elmer Fudd who doesn't like it. Surely there should be another way that you could solve this.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Okay, well, so maybe I can show you something here. Let's see. Okay, so as we go ahead, what is the solution to this? And the solution is the log manager system handle, or the wrench. There's my fanfare. Okay. All right, OpenEdge offers the log manager system handle. Okay, yeah, question.
When was log manager introduced?
I believe it was introduced in 10. Specifically, I'm gonna guess, I think it was 10.1 something. Anybody know for sure? Roy, do you have any idea?
No, I don't.
Yeah, it's been around for a while. It may even be in 10.0, because I think when they standardized all their log messages, this is used internally by Progress. So the app server and the admin server all use the same file format that you can use for your own application. So this is the log manager system handle. Okay. So it provides standardized reporting of runtime activity, logging diagnostic data for troubleshooting problems, and it's also the solution to this multi-user log file write issue right here. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to assign a log file name equal to a file. This is an attribute, this log file name here for the log manager system handle. And a system handle in Progress is a reserved word that is a handle which will contain attributes and methods that you can use. So there's many system handles. There's the session system handle, there's the error system handle, there's a whole bunch. But log manager is just one of those. And it also has methods, so I'm going to actually use the write message method. Say that fast three times. Where you have the string of the student plus the first and last name. Okay, so that's what that one does. And then we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to go in descending order for that. And also add to that. So, let's see if I did this right. One thing I wanted to do was, let's get rid of that again. Let's remove, oh, this one's log manager, so it won't matter. So I'll leave that one up, actually. Okay, so here I'm going to do 4, and then the graphical one, I'm going to do 3. Okay, so I'm going to run this one first. And actually, in these, I've added one other extra thing called a close log, too, which I'll explain why I did that. All right, so ready? So if I go here, run this, and then run that one, you guys get the horse race again. It's too bad that California Chrome didn't win this race, but whatever. Okay, so let's see. Let's take a look now at log manager.txt. So log manager.txt, is that right? Or no, what did I do? BI log manager, log manager1.txt, is that it? There we go. So as you can see, it's a little bit messy. The trade-off was that Progress has this fixed format, and this format takes up a lot of room in it, and it causes things to wrap. So that's the only drawback that I can see with using this. But it is easy to parse because it is consistent. But you see, here's Durwood Sirk, Emily Levy, Honey, Jin, blah, 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 and so on. And they all get in there. And then it says log file close at user's request, log file close, which I'll explain why that is in a minute. Okay, so that sort of solves it. Here's what the output looked like, well, when I ran it at a different time, and I just chopped up the stuff to the left, so this shows you a better way of how it looks. Okay. All right, so let's talk about the format. The daytime time zone is the first thing. Process ID, thread ID, logging level, execution environment. You can set logging levels. I'll show you some examples of the execution, well, of the log entry type. The execution environment, we're always going to be 4GL in this thing. And then there's message text that can be out there. So that's one of the messages I put out there. But okay, so what are some of the components used in this example? Bless you. Nothing to sneeze at. Yeah. That's good timing. I didn't pay him to do that. Okay. All right. So we use the log file name attribute, write message method. Other useful things are the clear log, close log, and log entry types method. Turns out that originally I didn't have the close log method in this, but I discovered there were some problems with that. So that when you assign a log file name, and this I haven't tested, I need to test this. I don't know if it's on the name or the write message method, progress will lock that log file. Okay, so if you went into Word and tried to change it, it won't let you until it's closed. Not only that, if you try to clear it, clear log actually wipes out the entire text log file and starts over. Okay, so it's like doing an output to file name without the append. It won't clear it. It won't give you an error, but it won't clear it if something else has it. And so either on one of these two, the log file name or the write message method, that's not scoped to a block. So when the procedure ends, it's still locked for that session it doesn't even unlock when you drop down to the editor. A lot of things when you drop to the editor in development get cleared, but this is not one of them. So this will still stay closed. And so that's why I needed to do a close log, because, and this sort of explains what I was saying, clears message, and it also allows the clear log message to execute when you do the close. I'll show you that in a minute, but I'll just go on to this, which is the log entry types method. This is really useful because it's a comma-separated list of one or more types of log entries to write to the log file. So not only is this good for this case study and doing a log of what's happening in our application, but you can also use it as a debugging tool. And Progress gives you a ton of these log entry types. The ones I'm going to use for here are 4GL messages, trace, 4GL trans and query info. But if we go to the help and I go to the log manager, okay, and if I go to the log entry types attribute, let's see, can you see that? Let's move it over a little bit. Here's all the ones as 4GL. You have stuff for the app server internet adapter, the app server agent. You have a plumbing one. I haven't tried these. There's a lot of them though. I have tried, there was one of them I tried, but it was really just too detailed, some of this stuff. Oh yeah, I tried, but I decided not to show you, was like the pro events. You can monitor every keystroke or every event, every mouse click that somebody does. You can imagine the volume, the voluminous nature of that. So, but yeah, so you got a ton of stuff that you can monitor. And, I forgot, there's also a logging level. So you can specify a logging level, and some of these are applicable and some of them aren't. So you have to look at the individual log entry type, and it'll say, oh, this one will work with a 2 or a 3 or whatever. Okay, so you can try different things out. So there's some good stuff here. All right, so now if I do create message 5 here, well, I'll do it over here in this one. And I added the close log. Maybe I won't add it. Maybe I'll comment it out. Okay, but previously I cleared it before, so now I'm going to run this. And this is logmanager1.txt. I'm helping it along a little bit. So I'm going to just get out. And it does a clear log, so if I do a look how many, count how many lines in logmanager1.txt, it says there's 38. Okay. And if I were to run this over here, and I do another clear log, I have 79. Okay, it didn't listen to me because I didn't close it off over here. I commented that out. Okay, so if I were to, I'm gonna try this. If I do it again from here, since I'm the one locking it, I think it will clear it. Let me just check that. Let's try that again. Yeah, so it cleared it that time. But that was because that session was the one that had locked it before. So that's something that's important to note. Now, if we look at that file, and again, it's a little bit hard to read because of all this stuff, but focus your eyes on this column right here. You see all the query info stuff? That stuff that occurs before you get into the for each. Then I start updating the database, so you see 4GL trans. Because I said that was one of the log entry types I wanted to monitor. So there's a whole bunch of those. And then query info at the end. Oh, and then I kind of skipped over. And 4GL APPL, that's that note, that tells you that it was a write message that wrote it. So that was my doing of sending that. All the other stuff was progress sending out stuff. Okay. And so here's like a more condensed version of it, so it's easier to read. The query plan, the ID, what is it? It's a for statement. Am I sorting it? No. Scrolling? No. What's the table? What are the indexes used? What are the statistics? This is all the stuff that occurs at the end. So this is the query info ending output here. And this is, you know, how many blocks, how many reads, were all of them useful? Well, for this presentation, they're all useful. Failed. I don't know if they didn't. If they failed or something like that. And then these are the transactions. Begin transaction, end. Tells you what line number they're on and so on. So, anyone think they could use that? Is that might be useful? No. Yeah. Question.
No, I think I could use it.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. All right. How many people here have a database LG file that gets really big when you try looking at it? Yeah. I don't know if you can set these for that, but for like the admin server and the app server logs, these are available. You have something called a log threshold. Notice it's a startup option. So before you get into a session, if you're doing a certain log file, you can specify how big it can get before OpenEdge rolls it over to a save file. So they're in manageable chunks. And then this number numlogs file says how many of these that you can roll over before it'll just, you know, delete the oldest one when it rolls through. But these are parameters that you'll see with the app server in OpenEdge Explorer and OpenEdge Management.
You cannot use that on the database.
Absolutely. On the database, yeah. Is it on the roadmap or no?
there is a command you can use with the...
Well, Prolog, yeah. That's been around forever. And that just chops it off. And yeah.
But. Tell me what size you want it on your roadmap.
Yeah. Yeah, so... But this is kind of useful, so thought I'd mention it. Okay. All right, so that's the log manager. And then the case study demonstration. I start out, this is really not the actual thing that I was showing you before. It's sort of like a prototype of what I was doing. But it starts out with a log file. Do you want to include alert box messages or clear logs? And instead of customers, I didn't want to show their customer list, so I did users instead. So hope you forgive me for that. But let me show you this. Show you a brief thing on this. Let me go to the data here. So here's menu test. So I'm going to do demo 060914. And then if I update users 94, that's Johnny Doe. His last name doesn't match, or his name doesn't match Howard, so nothing actually occurs. But this guy, Curly Howard, does he match?
Certainly.
Yeah, certainly he does. Okay, so. or Larry Howard. Okay. Oh, he matches. What do you think of that? All right, so we got to do that one. All right, but that's actually Curly. Okay. So then we go on, and we also got to update the parts. So I go back here. We have left nostril inhaler. Everyone needs a left and a right nostril inhaler. Can't do without those. So the part number matches the star 46. That's a critical part. Then we're going to send a log message number 3 out there. So that's something else. So if we go to update parts, and I forgot my part numbers here. Yeah, NI4650, and update that. And then that's that message. The right nostril inhaler is nothing to sneeze at. So that's actually going to appear in the log because one of my log entry types is a 4GL message. So because I activated that, that's going to appear there. Okay. So, and then here's another one, 2345. This one doesn't match a 4.6, so it's not critical, so that's not going to appear there, but that's a smoke sifter, large smoke sifter. So, and then SS2346 is a small one, and that one's going to match, so we'll get that. So if we look at that log file, we'll see that. So let me just show you that mess. Or I better do it this way. 6094.log. There we go. So this is what it looks like. And you see user Curly Howard approaching consumption limit on vanilla cappuccinos. Okay. Very critical message. Very important to running the business. Okay, invalid part number and part name. No, so this one's saying it's invalid. Then here's the, and then I also activated the stack trace. So here's the ABL debug alert, stack trace message. And it says what line it is and so on. So you get the idea on that. And let me show you some of the code. The code isn't really, here's the start log.p. So here it assigns, let me make that a little bit bigger, the string in the log file. That's simple naming convention. And then whether you should clear it or not. And then if you want to do messages, I do log entry types 4GL messages. And then the other, oh, maybe I didn't do a trace on this one. Take that back, but I think that shows up anyway. And then stop log at the end closes it. And then here's user main. And this part isn't, they didn't, they, when I say it at the beginning that the, for legacy apps where you're not having to do a lot of intrusion into the code, here I am intruding into this code for like the user maintenance program, but you could easily have put this in the write triggers, but my client didn't want to use write triggers. They, you know, they had certain standards and they didn't want to start using it. But if I were doing it, if I had my druthers, I don't have any druthers now, but if I did have them, I would put them in the write trigger, because that way you wouldn't have to modify this code as much. So, but notice here we say publish log message, and then we pass a bunch of parameters, and then after the update here, we then do another publish log message, and we pass a bunch of stuff over to it, and then the part main is similar, where we do another publish log message, but now we're passing a part instead of a customer, or a user, rather, down here. And then if the description matches that, we send out a message. So that's kind of silly, but that's just for demonstration purposes. And and then menu test, I forgot to show you this. At the very bottom here is the log message. So here are all your input parameters when they do a publish. And then it does a find message master. It finds the message. And then here's our substitute, which substitutes all that stuff in there. And this is sort of abbreviated what they could do, because it doesn't do the, these are, some of these are how it works, but yeah. So that's pretty much that. Any questions on that so far? Okay.
Is there a way to deactivate all those messages that make the file, to be able to read the file a little bit better?
The question is, are you able to deactivate the
all
the,
those messages that get added that they are not really
well,
part of the
yeah,
messages
I
want to send?
I believe you're asking is not the message, but if you wanted to chop off the front part, so you just parse.
That doesn't make it very friendly to be able to read.
Yeah, I think it's fixed. I haven't found a way that you can not put in a timestamp and stuff like that. But the point is that because of this format, you could easily write a little parser that could read it.
The information
yeah,
make
easily
it
make it readable. Yeah.
The nice thing about the format too is if you're looking for a problem and you want to check what happened at a certain time, all the log files have the same timestamp. So if you're sorting through several log files for a certain time, it's very easy to grasp that all at once instead of having to scroll through and find it.
Yeah, that's why I agree. And there's many times where I've stuck in messages in the heat of battle of trying to debug something. I go, oh damn, I forgot to put a now or a time or a today. This you don't have to think; it puts it in there, and there, away you go. So, I thought about that. I said, would it be nice if that was an option? And I'm going, nah. it would be nice if actually I think it would be nice maybe if you could optionally take off the process and the thread, because that takes up a lot of space. It might be a little bit easier to read. But again, if you just have a manager. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I mean, the timestamp and everything is useful because you need to know when that happened, but
there are
some other pieces of information that maybe it's too much.
Yeah, and I'm a BI bigot. If I loaded this in Word, I could, format it and make it a smaller typeface and I can fit it across much easier.
I can stick it in the browser and then just move the columns around wherever we want.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah.
Import it
into a temp table and do it that way. So not too bad. Okay. Any other things? Let's see if I have anything else. So here I chopped everything off from the right end, so this sort of shows you what it looks like without that stuff. And then, so here's my summary. A messaging alert system is useful and not that difficult to implement in a legacy-based OAE application. Using business rules-based engine, subscribe, publish, and log manager concepts to implement the alert system. And the log manager system handle is useful for many instances in an application and is helpful for a debugging application. So that's it. Any questions?
Other than putting code into the legacy application source or using the right triggers, are there any other suggested places to put that to allow code intrusion?
You could put you could put it also into session rights versus schema rights. I don't know if I made that clear. as far as different places to put it. Maybe user interface triggers for certain things, you could do that. But those are the things that come to mind, so I don't know, I'd have to think about it more.
App server activate, deactivate is really useful.
Oh, okay, thank you. Right, so putting a log message somewhere in the activate or deactivate? Yeah, that's a good point. Any other questions? Okay, well, before you go, I have some tchotchkes here if you want. If you like pens or pen lights, help yourself. First come, first serve. The ones in the front, I guess, that need them. But thank you all for coming.